Thank you, Joan, for that beautiful introduction. And thank you, Chris, for those thoughtful comments about writing and Virginia Woolf's diary. I really appreciated that. And thanks to all of you for coming out tonight and everyone who's watching online. And I'm real happy to be reading, and I'm really happy to be reading with Judy Bryce, who has had some health problems. And I'm just real glad to see you today, and with Charlie Bryce as well. So I am going to read a few poems from a manuscript I've been working on. The manuscript is tentatively called This Is How the World. And the first poem I'll read is called Tackle. Can everyone hear me?
Oh, yeah.
All right, thanks. And the poem does play on the many definitions of tackle. They're in the poem, but sometimes you can't catch things the first time you hear them. So tackle can refer to a system of pulleys that can be called tackle. Tackle is an ample word as a verb to undertake, for example, a problem, to seize or bring down, for example, a football player, as a noun, gear for fishing or handling a ship, a system of pulleys. My mother was good at using power tools. She also heard voices in her head. My father said she was a hell of a carpenter. My father is old school. In cool weather, he left dead animals, say a hog or deer, hoisted up with pulleys in our backyard until he had time to process the meat. Kids marveled at this when the bus collected my brother and me to learn things like spelling and fractions, which are useful skills. Yes, I like to think I could survive in the woods and, MacGyver-like, snare rabbits with pipe cleaners. In 1994, as a member of the National Guard, I spent 2 weeks in Salina, Kansas, learning how to use a system of pulleys to recover vehicles stuck in mud. As an exercise, we pulled a deuce and a half with rope and the power of our own muscles. If I were to live in the woods, I would take rope, chains, pulleys, fishing gear, boots, a container for water, and a hatchet, of which there are at least a dozen different kinds, tomahawk, Pulaski, firefighting, Hudson Bay, each with its own purpose, each with its own shape. I would take a Pulaski hatchet and drive the blade through oak bark and the adze through oak root. What I'm trying to say is, if I had to, I could live in the hollow of a tree. My mother was very afraid and possessed a vinegary wit. No wonder she hid in the roof rafters. I was very afraid and practical. No wonder I now keep 12-pound boxes of chicken pies in my freezer. In truth, I don't know how to snare or skin rabbits, though I can fry them up in a cast iron pan. In truth, I grew up in an era of light brights and Barbie dolls, but I saw some things. I have not once since 1994 pulled a vehicle out of mud, yet I find satisfaction in calculating a pulley system's mechanical advantage. I find comfort in load resistance, tackle resistance, friction, force, and strength. Thank you. This next poem is in 6 parts. A long poem for me. And there are 2 voices. I think it'll be evident. The Hey Private guy is a different voice than the narrator. I think you'll get it. Indoctrination in 6 movements. 1. I was 18 and not much of a runner, not to mention my eyesight was bad, but I joined the National Guard for reasons I still don't understand. Then in midsummer, boarded my first ever plane to Fort Dix, New Jersey, the same base where my father processed out of the Army after Vietnam. I was 18 and frumpy in my BDUs, but I guess I did okay because I never got in too much trouble, though some girls did. Some mouthed off or got caught with candy bars, and one girl got caught smoking and said, "The heck with this," and walked off base, and we never saw her again. We were all 18 or 20 or maybe 25 and generally naive about things like the military industrial complex and what exactly we'd gotten ourselves into, but it wasn't so bad. These weren't the draft days of my father's generation with rabid drill sergeants like in the movies who screamed fuckhead with every other breath and schemed with Hollywood style revenge. No, it wasn't so bad. We were healthy and young and by and large could withstand the push-ups and sit-ups and running, the marching and saluting, the scrubbing of latrines, the shooting of M16s, the throwing of grenades, the 4 a.m. wake-ups and general conformity the U.S. Army required of us. Though there was the small matter of Kuwait, a country I'd never heard of before, invaded by Saddam Hussein and Iraq's Republican Guard. And so U.S. forces gathered at the Saudi Arabian border, and the drill sergeants began to say, like a mantra, "Private, you're going to Saudi," whenever we showed signs of becoming prima donnas. And though we were supposed to be hard-charging soldiers, it would be a lie to say we weren't a little anxious about the whole oil-drunk ordeal. Two. "Hey, private, you want to run 3 miles at dawn, work all day behind the firing range berm, breathe the sulfur that sinks in the heat? Hell yeah. Private, you want to count these bayonets? You want to PMCS that truck? You want to pack those wheel bearings with grease? Want to drive that Humvee, find out why it's overheating? Want to wax the floor, untangle that camouflage netting? Want to take these forms to Sergeant Peters? Want a cigarette, cigar, a beer? Hey, private, why'd you join up? You want to be a hero?" I knew a man who said he had run another man over while driving a 5-ton cargo truck on a convoy to Mississippi. Saw the blood through the water forging window. Never stopped, never looked back. You think that's true? Aw, hell, private, do your time and get out. Wear your combat boots when you mow the lawn. Three. Private Getz was 18 and not very good at running or shooting or throwing grenades or much of anything, it seemed. She also frequently neglected to shower, owing to a painful shyness, perhaps, and a fear of the semi-open shower stalls. Private Getz had a schizophrenic mother, as I had. Private Getz planned to return to her mother's house after training, that is, if we didn't get shipped to Saudi. I hadn't seen my mother in several years. I no longer opened her letters. I was 18 and a bit of a prima donna. I did not like Private Getz much, and I did not want to hear about her mother, though in a moment of solidarity, or so I thought, on the night march when Getz struggled and another soldier had to carry her pack, I offered an orange, and our eyes met briefly and knowingly, until I cruelly looked away. Four. "Hey, private, why'd you join up?" Money for college. "Why'd you join up?" I like to play rough. I like the smell of motor oil. I like 5 a.m. convoys, the anticipation, the cut of diesel engines burning and churning in early morning fog. "Why'd you join up?" I was tired of working at Burger King. Five. "Private, we all reek of brimstone, the lust of a bull on a chain. It's in us like sex, in dust beaten up from folds of olive drab canvas. I can still taste it. And all of us, from the girl green as a switch, I didn't go to Saudi, to the lifer with bloated liver and jaundiced eyes. A lot of soldiers did, but I wasn't one of them. Every one of us is just a babe, eager, stupid, and blind in the forest, digging with our snouts to find the best route." Six, what I learned in the military. Wear knee highs under your wool socks to avoid blisters. Squeeze the trigger at the bottom of the exhale. Put instant coffee granules between your molars and cheek to stay awake for guard duty. If a man tries to sleep with you, even though you haven't showered in 3 days, say no. If he also hasn't showered in 3 days, say hell no. When tying a tourniquet, don't forget to elevate the limb. Don't forget to draw a T on the forehead in dirt or blood. Don't forget to treat for shock. If attacked with a nerve agent, don your NBC mask. Inject your number one atropine shot, a short one, into your outer thigh. Hold the needle in place for 10 seconds. Repeat with your number two shot, the long one. Don't go into off-limits areas, which include open fields after dark and a list of bars read aloud at final formation every Friday. Don't write down the names of the off-limits bars and go to them anyway. If you do go to an off-limits bar, don't let anyone steal your money. Don't drink underage, or rather, don't get caught. Thank you. And I have a few poems about my father. This one is called Roadside Assistance. Wednesday, car won't start, called for a jump. Should have had it fixed then, should have gotten AAA. Friday, car won't start, supposed to visit parents out of state, instead took a bus to AutoZone, $120 on a credit card, ratchet set, battery charger, lead shim for a battery post. Shake the cables, my father says over the phone. His lungs are failing, his heart too. He needs a drop of morphine to sleep at night. It's just a loose connection, he says. I'm sure of it. Car fixed by Saturday, half a week for a one-hour job. My father says to my husband, in good humor, you could fuck up an anvil. We're basically kids hitchhiking from town to town, our thumbs wiggling like blind moles poking out of the dirt. Monday, car won't start. Turns out we left the dome light on. True story. This next one is a work in progress. It's after Sharon Olds, and a shout out to Nancy Krigowski, in whose workshop I started working on this. Ode to the tin can telephone. The repurposed houses of diced tomatoes and creamed corn, the scratch of paper still glued across the silver ribs, the cotton string untwining. Ode to the mouth on one end, the ear on the other, the impossibility of the journey, the string never taut enough, the vibrations too loose, too wild, but praise the heroic optimism in the attempt. Praise the fibers, intimate friction, the subtle rotation, the holding on and letting go. And praise the wind that catches the can's lip and says, hoo-wah, a serpentine hello. When my father was ill, he imagined death as flipping a switch, but asked, why can't we talk to each other after? His mind was addled, his whole world a puzzle, and he still jamming knob into socket to order fragments of grass and sky. Praise the will of spirits humming, perhaps through the ether. Ode to the strained and reaching thread. Thank you. And I'd like to close with a Pittsburgh poem, and this goes out to Jason Irwin. When the crows came. You should have seen the crows, says Jason one morning about a flock, or more properly, murder, that flew like a great enchanted breath over our apartment building. Were they crows or ravens, and what's the difference? One conjures cornfields, the other a dark house with Edgar Allan Poe's rap, rap, rapping, and neither seems right for Pittsburgh. My friend Alan and I encountered some crows while hiking near Hakodate, Japan. Ours, they cawed, claiming the fields and wild grass, their shiny beaks biting the air. Okay, yours, I thought, and we laughed and took pictures and went back into town for squid, fried potatoes, and beer. Back in Pittsburgh, I pick up Jason at the Oakland Library, double park with our flashers on. It's 8 p.m. and I want to get home, but Jason rap, rap, raps on the passenger window. Look at the crows, he says, and I step out to find sycamores breathing, pregnant with a you-know-something's watching you air. The crows lift from the tree. We watch with our heads thrown back, our throats exposed. They are one in many, a fierce many, a magnificent flurry darkening an almost night sky. Thank you.